So we've broken with tradition a little bit, and we've slipped an extra podcast in to in between Steve Coppard and, as we advertised last time, Kevin Still. Kevin's actually joining us in a couple of weeks' time, and we'll have that podcast out pretty much as planned. But I thought it was really good to get Lou on with us and talk a bit more about Trustfolio. We've had so many questions about what the product, what Trustfolio is, what it stands for. Everyone seems confused. I thought it'd be a great idea. I think you suggested it originally, to be fair, to get Lou on board and tell us a bit more about it. I think it went quite well, actually.
I thought it was brilliant. I mean, Lou is the person who started all of this, so she's best placed to give that background and story, and she told it really well, I thought, and quite a few outtakes as well, I think, to add to the Christmas edition, Peter.
The bumper Christmas edition, yes, yes. Goodness me, I'm not sure. I've got all kinds of Viz comic connotations going through my head now in terms of the title of that, but we'll leave that for now. I think you know, she sort of talked a bit about the background, what we're trying to do today. And I thought what was really, really useful was the speech she gave around how it actually benefits each party. So IPs, creditors, the consumer, regulators weren't touched on actually, but as we know, we're sort of, you know, looking at how the insolvency service are reviewing insolvency solutions. I know they are quite interested in the data that we can put out, which obviously will have to be all GDPR compliant and so on and so forth. But I thought she summed it up quite well.
Do you know, it's a bit of a cliche we use, but what tends to be a good outcome for the customer tends to be a good outcome for the creditor. And you can relate that to all stakeholders in terms of what we do. And she did. Yes, you're exactly right. She covered that really well. So I think it'll be a good listen for the audience, those who know a little bit about us and those who don't know anything about us. I think that sort of sets it out really well, you know.
Well, why don't we just crack on with it and roll credits?
Let's roll the credits.
The Dead Tech Podcast with Peters and Lee.
No, it's not Peters and Lee, it's Peter and Lee.
My hair is I should have bothered and done my hair properly, actually. It is awful. Can you introduce me as Mother of Dragons?
I have to now.
I've got a Steve Coppard and Kevin Still sandwich on this particular appearance.
That's going in the outtakes.
It is.
His editing skills are getting better and better, thankfully. My hair's terrible. I keep forgetting it's a podcast, though. It's not a... Is that all the podcasts start?
Yeah,
it's just
much,
for me. Yeah. Sorted, done, right, round we're off.
The Dead Tech Podcast with Peter and Lee.
Hi, everyone. This is episode 4 of the Trustfolio Dead Tech Podcast. We're delighted to have today a special guest, our Chief Executive, Lou Yates. Hi, Lou. How are you?
All good. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And Peter.
Hello. Hi. Good. I was going to say good afternoon, but it depends what time you're listening, really, doesn't it? I was going to introduce Lou by the various different titles that I believe you have. Mother of Dragons, Crazy IVA Lady, or as we know her, our boss. And as Lee says, this is podcast number 4, which we've sort of snuck in between Steve Coppard and Kevin Still. We advertised Kevin as our next, I was going to say culprit, but no, our next victim, yes. But we decided actually to slip an extra podcast in between because we wanted to talk a little bit about Trustfolio itself for a change and where it sits in the stratosphere. So thank you for joining us. Obviously, you have to watch our P's and Q's. And it's almost obligatory that we sort of start these things off with a little bit of football quipage. And I think last time I made a complete fool of myself with Steve because I admitted I know nothing about football. So, Lou, we haven't talked about the women's football at all yet. And it seems like ages ago already, and yet the girls brought the trophy home.
Get me on my soapbox talking about women's football versus men's. And I do know a bit about football, but I don't follow my team, which is Manchester United, very much anymore. I'm all a bit disillusioned for a long time.
Such a disillusioned Man U fans at the minute, Lucy.
There is. But when you look at the men's game, you look at the women's game, look, we haven't got any kind of women up in court for beating the women, female players up in court for beating up the partner or, you know, other kind of things in hotels and stuff. So just better role models and generally a better, game.
Well, I think we should move off the football theme and talk about boxing this week, Peter, because we know Lou's a big boxing fan. Just quickly before we do that, though, there was a good news story. Sunderland did win at the weekend and Newcastle didn't. So we'll just get that in, then we'll move on to boxing.
Sorry, is that some tumbleweed going through there?
massive fight at the weekend, Lou. Did you watch that, Joshua?
Yeah, brilliant fight. The scorecard was a little bit iffy, but AJ got,
I watched it. I don't see how one judge could put Joshua down as winning that fight. It was pretty much one-sided from what I watched anyhow. And I like my boxing. I think I'm a bit of a connoisseur. I didn't see anything but an Usyk win.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that a lot in boxing. You wonder, you know, if you're watching the same fight, to be honest, the scorecard. So, yeah, lack of transparency, lack of trust in that sport, which is appropriate for, you know, I suppose what we talk about in our sector. But other than that, it's great when you get a situation like we got with Usyk and you feel like you've watched a fair and a really, you know, good fight and a great backstory behind it.
I wonder if it would have made a difference to the outcome if you'd had a pair of your boxing gloves on.
100%.
So you very nearly beautifully segued into the main body of our conversation, which I feel I must crack on with a little bit now. But one of the things, I mean, and this is a bit different to our usual podcast because we all know what we're talking about, the three of us, allegedly anyway, in my case. But I wanted just to explain, I think, a little bit or understand a bit in your sort of words about why Trustfolio exists. How did it start? What drove you to create this organisation and attract us all together?
Well, it seems like an awfully long time ago now, but COVID does that to you, doesn't it? We lose time, like COVID time. So I think I was looking back and it started, the real start of this is about 2016, which is a lot longer than I thought it was. And we started with a meeting called the Personal Insolvency Working Group, which we brought together purely because there was a lot of noise, a lot of issues, a lot of complaints. Everyone was moaning. We say everyone, I mean, all stakeholders involved in personal insolvency, IVA in particular, complaining and dissatisfied with the sector as a whole. So we bring together this meeting and it was very popular. It was oversubscribed. We have everybody in the room there, creditors, debt advice organisations, people like Debt Camel, the creditor voting agency, insolvency regulators, licensing bodies. Everybody interested is in that room. And the blame just bounced around the room for these issues that we're all experiencing. It just literally bounced around the room. And so it became apparent where the problems were. They were with everybody, not just one part of the sector. So then we think, well, there's ways to fix it. And for me, I was looking for and trying to appeal to those stakeholders within the sector to pull together and to fix it. But there was a lack of, say, desire or willingness to collaborate and do that. So the long story short is I end up looking to kind of do it myself through the organisations that then come afterwards through the insolvency panel. So it wasn't really meant to be a business. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a entrepreneurial venture. It wasn't a altruistic one by design either. It just evolved as there's a load of problems. And actually I could see that there was fixes to it instantly. There were fairly simple fixes. So that's where we came from. That's how we started. And then we have COVID and that kind of, it either brings, you know, well, it brings opportunity or it brings, you know, problems. And it brought both. And for our organisation in particular, for the insolvency panel, it brought an opportunity to, again, quite altruistically, just push ahead and provide digital credit reports and services to the free advice sector, which was a very rewarding and impactful thing to do. So that was up to, you know, where we were as an embryo of an organisation and how we got some legs, really.
But so you didn't sort of set out, as it were, to be a fintech. It wasn't a, you know, this is what we're going to do, we're going to change the world type of thing, but it sort of just grew from its sort of humble beginnings, I guess.
Yeah, we definitely didn't want to be a fintech. So, you know, I used to put out on Twitter that these fintechs were all emperor's new clothes, all show, no go. So we definitely didn't want to be a fintech. And we are a fintech. We do fit into that category. But, you know, I think there's also a bit of negativity around that term. I think it's possibly overused, and I think it's been said that organisations shy away from fintech now. I think you're just trying to sell them something that's not fit for purpose. And for me, I just wanted to ensure that I'm not bothered about the fintech title at all. If we're in it, if we are, if we're not, what it drives us really is, you know, the creating solutions to problems in the sector that we hold dear, you know, that's our sector that we've worked in, you know, that are our colleagues. So
I mean, one of the things I've often heard you say is everyone sort of needs to get on board. We can't do this by ourselves. We're going to improve the industry. Everyone's got to have sort of a stake in that or a buy into that.
Yeah, for sure. I think what we've emerged as is an aggregator really in the sector, as a collaborator. It's what we're really good at. I think that's what sets us apart. If we as Trustfolio would have like a competitive edge, it would be our ability to work with others and collaborate. So all the way back through that experience through COVID with the insolvency panel, our great relationships with and backing from things like Experian, organisation like Experian and TransUnion, Advice UK is another key component, I suppose, of our evolution. And we've just always been quite naturally a great collaborator. That's what we do. And we try to show others in the sector that's how to create your competitive edge. You know, you're not going to find the secret sauce and your competitive edge hiding over there in the corner, not talking to anybody and not discussing your ideas. Not this day and age anyway. There's no trade secrets. So collaboration, and I think we've found it already in, you know, we've held webinars just in this last month with local government and then central government, and we've found some of the bits that they're missing. So easy to be able to fix and create big change just by creating that collaboration engagement, just by talking. So, you know, that's our seat. That's what we are. We're a collaborator, and we're bringing the different elements of our sector together and sharing digital tools and ideas and innovation to make, to give people a competitive edge, really.
And it's not just about IVAs. I mean, it started off, obviously, as you say, with the meeting about IVAs, but actually it's more about enabling better debt solutions, as the website says now, this sort of debt tech idea. But we're not sort of just stuck on IVAs, although that's a great place to start and to improve. But, you know, there are similar-ish issues, I guess. There's not enough digitization, I don't think, in other debt solutions either. So that's really what the company's about now, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, IVAs is the one we focused on because of those issues at the time, because they were quite strongly vocalised, particularly by the debt advice sector. Creditors were dissatisfied. So, and it's an area of debt solutions that still has some formal process. It has a formal process around it. So then it's made it easier for us to innovate and digitalise that formal process. But it's an IVA. It's a great debt. So it's the only debt solution that I think we have in the market. I'm sure it is, that still involves that credit in, that the creditor gets actively involved in. So they have a say, you know, they've got a part in that. And it's still the one that balances, seems to balance the needs of all the parties really quite well. You know, there's not just all debt write-off, there's a payback, there's a nice little balance in there. So I quite like it. It goes all the way back to legislation in 1986, and there's not been a lot of change in individual voluntary arrangements since. There's been entrepreneurial elements that have driven the marketing side of it, and we've got some digitization just quite naturally, some kind of innovation in technology that's driven volume. So we've got these volume IVA firms, but in the core product itself, as in whether it's fit for a consumer of today, there's big question marks over that. And I think there is of all our debt solutions. I think that's something as a sector we need to be discussing as a hot topic. You know, 1986, I know for sure that this product is not fit for purpose for consumers from 1986 to now. And you think about just these last 2 years with COVID and how different our lives are and how different we work and we live. You know, is something even 2 years ago fit for purpose anymore? So we need lots of conversations and data. And this is what we're particularly about, and companies like ours that are fintechs or digital, about getting the data and actually then using it to fuel these conversations about what our debt solution should look like to deliver the best outcomes. Because you want the best outcomes for the consumer, you want the best outcomes for all stakeholders, for creditors as well, and IPs. You know, or debt management companies, whoever has to administer those, they're companies at the end of the day, or even charities, and they've got overheads. They need to function. They need to be able to deliver the service at their optimum levels. So the data can help provide some transparency and information for us to start inventing better debt solutions or adjusting these debt solutions to be fit for purpose, really.
And I know Lee's itching to ask a question, and I just want to ask one little bit further bit, because the other side of the Trustfolio offering is the Debt Advisor Support Portal, what we lovingly call DASP internally for short. Tell us a bit about that, because that still harks back to the roots of the organisation, really, doesn't it? Or the TIP part of it?
It does. Yeah. So we love a good acronym, don't we, in the debt sector?
We do.
So we have to have one. So we have to have another one, DASP. No, it's brilliant. Ryan Hayes, formerly of Shelter, took over TIP, and that must be over a year ago now, and he's made a huge impact. TIP made a massive impact during COVID to the free advice sector, supplying credit reports, enabling them to keep giving advice, working from home. We did that free of charge. So we created through that effort, a whole lot of trust, credibility, showed what we was about as an organisation, and showed we could deliver digital solutions. I remember first doing the build and the integration with Experian for that product. And Experian was shocked, and I'm sure they'd say so again, how we managed that build for such a small organisation. We hands down beat some of the biggest blue chip organisations that they'd had tried to build on that. We're very good at what we do. And in terms of DASP and TIP serving, from Ryan's point of view, he's completely focused on the debt advisors, that part of our sector, that part of the ecosystem, ensuring that they don't fall behind in terms of digital innovation. So some of the organisations, some of the charities and not-for-profits are teeny tiny, you know, they run out of churches and stuff. But why shouldn't they have the best digital solutions, dare I say it, blockchain? So that was the focus, and still is the mission behind DASP, ensuring that no matter where a consumer goes for debt advice, if they go to a huge commercial organisation or a small church like debt advice organisation, those advisors and that consumer is going to benefit from some of the best technology. So it's kind of creating that even playing field in terms of innovation.
I can't believe she mentioned the B word, Lee.
I know. Yeah.
Well, that was my question. If you for the listeners who don't know what blockchain is, Lou, if you could just talk a little bit. I'm only joking.
We need to get out of our blockchain. Why is it so difficult? I don't know why it's difficult for us to talk about blockchain. It does feel like it's becoming a bit of an elephant in the room.
It's not one to talk about on a 20-minute podcast, probably. I mean, whenever I'm asked about blockchain, it's a system for recording information that cryptocurrency and bitcoins are built on. It future-proofs the security side of things. But we've got a whole separate presentation on that, which could take far more than 20 minutes.
Just what attracted me to blockchain when we started Trustfolio as a project from the credit portal was that you didn't need trust. So we were missing trust, you know, fundamentally. You couldn't get a referee. No one trusted the referees, whether it be regulators, creditor agents, even in the sector. So there was this just massive lack of trust of intermediaries. Where blockchain comes in is you can kind of, it's just by default, you don't need it. So we can build up from that, but at least we take out that vision and whatnot that's there in the sector and deal with that straight off. So that helps.
With the IVA as a debt solution, it still comes in for a lot of criticism from some quarters of the debt advice sector, if I'm being honest. That's where I see most of the criticism stem, suggesting DROs will be a better solution for lots of customers. And they tend to blame either lack of advice or good quality advice or income-focused lead generation as to why IVAs, that shouldn't be IVAs, go through. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that, Lou, and also how the tech that we've developed with the creditor debt solution platform could maybe bring some trust back to that particular solution.
Well, I mean, it comes back to the data, doesn't it? Most things do at this this kind of day and age comes back to using the data to show us whether our feels and feelings and myths and thoughts are in any way aligned with the reality of it. Because I don't know. I mean, I've got some really strong thoughts. I think I've got a lot of experience in IVA, but I couldn't tell you for sure, you know, which firms did a good job or a bad job and which IVAs worked better than others, you know, what customers were best going into them and whatnot. And again, back to that point, whether the product is still fit for purpose or we should, you know, tweak it to suit. Lead generation is a huge part of the IVA ecosystem in many ways, and it is the most visible part of IVA process to those outside of it as well. It looks unsavory, lots of the ads that you see, the way that lead generators work. But ultimately, as unsavory as it looks, if we and other stakeholders are all about outcomes for the consumer, the question has to be how much of an impact does that lead generation have on an IVA and getting that outcome, most importantly. So I've got a big question mark on that. And that's what we are trying to, I suppose, deliver and get transparency on through our platform, working with our stakeholders. So from a lead generation point of view, it's like being told by your mate to go to the doctor, because a lead generator doesn't make an IVA. It has very little influence on it. They're just delivering that information and that client to an insolvency practitioner. And then the creditors then get to vote on the IVA. So it's almost like a second safety net, in essence. If it really is terrible, then there should be a safety mechanism where the creditors are saying, no, that doesn't look right for the client, doesn't look right for us, etc. So there's a couple of things built in, and what we're interested to understand and educate and inform our creditors and other stakeholders through Trustfolio is how much of an impact the journeys at the front end have on the outcomes of an IVA and the success of it, if anything. We know that that lead generation journey adds a financial, extra financial burden on the insolvency practitioners because they pay for it, and it is a really lucrative business to be in as a lead generator. But if they can swallow that cost and still deliver the goods and deliver the client's outcome and deliver those dividends back to creditors, does it matter? We don't know. And I mean, that's one of the really good reasons why we're here with this technology, trying to find out, because it's a critical thing to find out. But our energy could be wasted beating lead generations is my thought. And I did that for a long time. So, you know, I could potentially have wasted 2 years of my life and an awful lot of tweets. We'll have to find out.
I think that's the exciting bit for me, the data that we produce through the platform, informing better decisions, better votes, and also making it easier for creditors, because they might come in for a bit of kicking as well in terms of they're not voting in the right way. It's a bit of a mess at the moment for a lot of these creditors in terms of how they receive this information, how often it comes through, the format it comes through in. So I'm excited about how the platform can deliver some simplicity and consistency and the outcome in terms of MI to demonstrate what good looks like.
There is, I think we should kind of make the point, because we talk an awful lot across the sector only about consumer outcomes. And I kind of want to make the point to our stakeholders what Trustfolio is about in terms of delivering to them. So we want great outcomes for consumers. That goes without saying, you know. But what we want for our insolvency firms and creditors is the stuff which they want. So, you know, if you're a creditor, you want better dividends. You want surety of dividends. You do want to know that your consumer is being delivered a positive experience, a right experience, especially if your local government is your citizen, et cetera, your resident. From an insolvency practitioner's point of view, it is incredibly competitive out there. The pips are squeaking. It is very, very, you have to be lean and mean. So they want this technology to deliver them really good engagement with creditors. They want more consistency with voting. I mean, one said to us the other day at an insolvency firm, oh, you know, you can vote where this particular creditor votes yes on a Monday and then no on the same case on a Wednesday. There's just no consistency. And that's not good for anybody. It's not good for consumers, not good for IPs. And, you know, so we deliver to insolvency practitioners that kind of efficiency that they desperately need. And I suppose help them to find where their competitive edge might be through the data, maybe where they're falling behind some of the other firms in the sector, where they can do better. Creditors, well, you know, they're missing out on payments, they're missing out on actual cold hard cash at the minute, which is important to their bottom line. I think Peter and I have talked a lot about FCA Consumer Duty coming down the line. That seems to potentially, if you're an FCA regulated creditor, you need to be demonstrating that you've made an active or an informed choice or have a policy in relation to these kind of cases. You know, it's not, you know, ignoring them or not doing anything with them is no excuse, I think, anymore, and is probably not going to pass muster. So again, it gives them tools to do that really simply, really easy, without a massive re-education process of their staff and colleagues and resources. So the aim is to give, you know, technology, whatever you do, any kind of entrepreneurial ideas you have or innovations, they won't work unless you give everybody a little something of what they want and what they need, really. And I mean, that's what we're trying to achieve in this sector with this with the Trustfolio for the greater good, really, for longevity of debt solutions, probably at a time that it's needed the most. You know, I see, you know, demand going ridiculous, so yeah. The timing.
So we've said what sort of sets us apart, I suppose, but yeah, we probably are the first company to create a piece of technology like this, which serves all the stakeholders, as you've already described. But you know, others have tried to put in place portals in the past, but it's always been a little bit limited in terms of success. What is it you think that does? What's the key to Trustfolio that makes the difference, and where this should or will succeed, you know, where others haven't been able to get critical mass?
It's the trust and independence, I think. I mean, it's being in the right time, the right place with the right technology helps a lot, but trust has broken down. So when it's broken down so badly, then it makes it easier to build that back up or to come in with something that can solve that problem. And I suppose the timing is good. But the independence is definitely one of the critical ones. In I think it's always been across the sector, this reluctance, as I've mentioned before, to collaborate because you're sharing too many ideas with potentially a competitor. So we provide a piece of technology, you know, that's all it is. It's not us. It's not Trustfolio. We're not telling you how you vote. We're not telling you how you put your IBAs together and how you run your business. It's a piece of technology that brings you together with those other stakeholders, but still has that those barriers that protect your business or your organization. And that independence is absolutely key for all sorts of reasons and seems to resonate heavily in terms of this sector as something that's required. And builds that trust. So that's certainly one of the key differences. And we have that legacy through our previous organisations like the Insolvency Panel. What we've done there, I think, really helps demonstrate that. So we're not just saying it, we live it, we breathe it, and we've proven that that's how we behave as a culture, as a firm. So, but remembering it's just technology that we're putting in there. It's not, you know, me or you, Peter, you know, telling them how to vote.
Well, Luke, look, that's been really useful. I hope everyone will have found out a lot more about the organisation from this podcast. And I'm quite sure we're going to have you back as a guest many more times in between different guests that we have from outside of the business, really just to sort of top that up and perhaps keep us abreast of developments and how things are going. So I'm sure we'll be speaking to you again very shortly.
Thank you.
Well done, you've managed to get to the end of the fourth Debt Tech podcast with Peter and Lee. I hope you enjoyed listening to us talking to Lou Yates, Chief Exec of Trustfolio. I know we certainly did, and she didn't pay us for saying that. She is the boss after all. No, we thoroughly enjoyed it. Remember to look out for podcast number 5, which we'll be recording in the next few days. And our guest then will be Kevin Still, Director of DEMSA. I know we said he'd be podcast number 4, but he'll definitely be on podcast number 5. He'll be talking to us about how he sees digital resources being used to help debt advisors make the most of the time they have with their clients. And of course, in the meantime, if you'd like to know a bit more about what we lovingly call debt tech, head over to trustfolio.co.uk on the World Wide Web.